Yo, how we doing, guys?
Fantastic.
Yeah, doing great. Really, really stoked to have this conversation today.
I see. I mean, if Joe, Phil, Drew, any of the Bitcoin Magazine guys want to come up and contribute towards the middle or end, welcome.
Thank you. Let her rip.
Well, I think we're also very excited because we've been working on this for a long time. So we're happy to share with everyone, but realize that for everyone else, it's their first time hearing about us partnering on this and why we did it and what this actually means. So sometimes, a social post or press release doesn't do it. And before we can roll out all the exciting things that we're going to do together, we thought we would jump on our favorite format to discuss things, which always happens to be Twitter Spaces, and let everybody know about why we decided to do this partnership, what this means for the rest of the not just industry, but for also Bitcoiners, and how what people can expect out of working together.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mike. And I guess to just kick things off here, I want to give everyone just a lay of the land as to who is speaking and what the purpose of this Spaces is. So, as Mike alluded to, we are announcing this new partnership with Unchained, and they're going to be our collaborative custody partner here at Bitcoin Magazine. And we think this is a really important time in the industry to set the standard for how to securely and safely custody your Bitcoin, and why we think that this model of custody is such an important tool for Bitcoiners to have in their toolkit. And so discussing this today is going to be Joe Kelly. He's the CEO of Unchained. He's joined by Drew Bunsall, who is the Unchained CSO, as well as Shimen Lazarov, who is the CMO at Unchained. And on the Bitcoin Magazine side here, we have Mike Germana, who's the Bitcoin Magazine president, as well as Dylan LeClaire, who many of you are familiar with for his takes on the market. And he is Bitcoin Magazine's institutional lead, and myself, Spencer Nichols, marketing manager at Bitcoin Magazine. And as we build this partnership in the days and weeks leading up to this, I think Mike had a really wonderful vision as to why this is so important for these two companies to come together. And I think really articulates well why we're so excited for this as really the way to set the standard for how to do Bitcoin and how to do it the right way for safety and ease of use as well. So, Mike, could you share a little bit of your perspective on why this is such an important thing and why you saw Bitcoin Magazine and Unchained as such good partners for coming together?
I would like to take credit for this vision, but it's not really. I don't think it's my vision. I think it was a lot of great conversations with the Unchained team. As you know, at Bitcoin Magazine, we have a huge responsibility for all the new readers that we have and people who've been reading our content for well over 10 years, for how we kind of educate and inform them on what's happening in the industry and best practices. And really, Bitcoin Magazine's never had that partner that we've been able to work with at this scale for how do we really put people inform people the best way to take a custody. We've had a lot of whether that's advertisers or sponsors or people that we are interviewing or doing press about, but once again, we're just a media company. So being able to partner with people who have been not only in the custody space, have been leaders in the custody space, and I like to think have the least amount of drama and the most amount of work to show for in the custody space. We were turning to a partner that could help us not only better understand it, but help the readers that we have and the responsibility that we have to put them, to make a really good recommendation, to let them understand what that is. And we could think of no one better than, the Unchained team. So, we've spent months talking about this. What does this actually mean? How to make sure that we are a unbiased media company, yet how do we also rely on our partners to help make great content, to help inform the next wave and the next generation of Bitcoiners that are coming in? What is the best way for not only them to do custody, but what's the best way for, as we saw with what's happening with the ETF wars that's happening, are there other better ways for you to have your retirement in Bitcoin, especially kind of an IRA product? And obviously no one does that better than I think Unchained, because the only place you can actually keep your keys to the Bitcoin that you have. So, we're excited about this because we understand the responsibility we have to our readers, and now we can partner them up with the right person to make sure that Bitcoin is secured, because there's nothing more important to us than securing not only this, next generation of Bitcoiners, but I guess the rest of their family, so the third generation of Bitcoiners. And really, once again, how can we do that partnership where they're able to you know, the investment in our company to produce additional content is important to us as well, because it's obviously part of our core business. So, you know, this is what we've been working on, and, you know, we'd love to hear from the Unchained team, I guess, what they would like to see out of this partnership, and why they thought we'd be good partners.
Ah, so lovely. So nice to be here. No, thanks for the intro, Mike. I was just, you're just touting, I mean, how, for Drew and I, it's a cool milestone. It's been great to see Bitcoin Magazine through the years, see the physical magazine, see what y'all have done, as great work for the space, and, you know, the fun we all had at the conferences, everything. And yeah, for our journey towards building a secure custody foundation for our clients and the products that exist in the Unchained product family. It's great to have a partner like y'all that sees what we do, values it, and wants to bring that in more to the fore for the kind of next wave of new interest in Bitcoin.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think our mission at Unchained has always been to help people secure, manage, and grow their Bitcoin for generations. And we are very excited to be able to educate the Bitcoin Magazine audience on these methods of custody that are, you know, not quite just DIY self-custody, definitely not like giving up control of your Bitcoin to a custodian. It's collaborative custody where clients are in control of their keys, but still get access to a team of experts and a partner in Unchained to help with Bitcoin financial services. So Mike, you mentioned retirement accounts, for example. We help folks for their personal accounts, their trust accounts, their business accounts, their retirement accounts. And we really tried to generate a suite of financial services for people who are treating Bitcoin as their long-term savings. And we just felt like the Bitcoin Magazine audience could really benefit from learning more about multi-sig and how to do Bitcoin the right way.
I feel like Unchained has always been kind of a product-led company that has focused on aspects of the technology, getting the product, building things together, you know, hosting ourselves where we can. And so partnering with an organization that's excelled at marketing and building up their brand and having a community of folks in the Bitcoin Magazine orbit, it's also very, very complimentary to us.
Yeah, and I think from the Bitcoin Magazine side, what we're really excited about is the opportunity to be able to highlight some of the work that Unchained has done. I know you guys have a really unique perspective on where do you think Bitcoin is going and what kind of infrastructure it's going to take to get us there. And I think really the point of alignment we have together is Bitcoin properly secured is going to be the foundation for the future of finance. And I think that Unchained is laying out a really great roadmap for how that's going to be made possible in a user-friendly but also highly secure way. And we think that's also just like from individuals to institutions is just a great way of how to eliminate counterparty risk in markets. And as well, I think that just Unchained's staff and technical understanding is going to be a great addition to the type of content that Bitcoin Magazine can make. So we're really thrilled to be able to show Unchained as a leader in this space, and also for Unchained to interact more fully with Bitcoin Magazine and bring your expertise to our readers. And so for those reasons, I think we're really excited. And also, I think now, like with the ETFs and just the state of Bitcoin's institutional adoption, I think that we need financial services to take this next step forward with these new people joining, and we want to do that the right way. And so that's why we're being so intentional about this partnership, and we think that working together with Unchained is the right way to do that. And I think Joe or Phil, I know we're still trying to get Drew up here, but I would love to just hear a little bit more about how you guys think about what collaborative custody can do from a financial services standpoint. I know something that you guys talk often about is the IRA product. And I think that being able to hold physical Bitcoin in your IRA and know that it isn't being rehypothecated or you know, the custody isn't screwed up, I think is just a really unique thing that wasn't available with technologies before Bitcoin. So I would just like to hear like how you guys think about financial services and ownership of wealth through and like how that's enabled by the foundation of collaborative custody.
Yeah, I can take a first stab. I think, I mean, a lot of the ways you know, the existing financial networks work, it's parties that you have contracts that face each other, and there's some trade of assets inside those contracts. Maybe those assets live at a third party custodian that's, you know, holding some collateral, and then there's, you know, a lending or some other, you know, credit or derivatives relationship between the counterparties. And so there's all these kind of subtle ways that, that risk can enter the equation through these multiple parties being involved. And if you're facing a counterparty that's put assets somewhere that you don't have physical sight into or don't have some control of over, then there's just extra elements of risk that are there in that arrangement. So this is kind of the meta, like, general principle of, I think, just kind of what exists in the existing financial system, and it's just evolved with all these layers of counterparties and assets that aren't always there, and there's a lot of time considerations, the different kind of maturities within these contracts, and say some are maturing now, so people need their assets now, but maybe they're not there. And so based on the kind of, you know, landscape that you have there, that's what, you know, a lot of that buildup creates these cycles, creates these booms and busts that can leave folks bankrupt and not without their assets. And then we've kind of gone ahead and we saw that through 2022, the kind of realization of that same mode of thinking inside of the crypto landscape, and a network of people borrowing and lending with each other that resulted in a couple black holes of different hedge funds that have borrowed assets and then traded them, and so they're no longer there. So people looking to call that collateral back, not getting it. So something like collaborative custody really helps put all the assets in a much more transparent place while they're party to a contract or involved in a financial relationship between companies or individuals. And so that's just kind of that really builds up a more stable set of assumptions and more of a robust kind of landscape for parties to trust each other, to know that the collateral is there at all times, a more of kind of an equity base instead of maybe a debt base or just pure credit kind of creation type of economy. So really getting that bedrock layer right is what then allows more trust to build on top and less gyrations, less kind of, you know, bottom trapdoor kind of falling out underneath the market and leading to a lot of loss and pain. People live it in the real world of the fiat of bank failures last year, if the dollars you thought were at SVB suddenly over a weekend maybe aren't there. So that leads you to have concern over, was it mean to have dollars in the first place? So Bitcoin's bare asset nature being something you can physically hold, and just know where it is at all times through much more verifiable cryptography. That's just a better financial system. So it takes a long time. Not everyone sees it right out the gate, and it takes a lot of proof points and sometimes painful lessons to know what it is we're talking about when we talk about this stuff. Counterparty risk was just not like an everyday concept, you know, probably for many people 10 years ago outside of Wall Street. But now for a lot of crypto participants and people, even in, like, especially startup land that have banked with SVB, now they sure as heck know what that term means.
One of the most interesting things, I think, about your guys' business model, especially like amidst the fee compression of some of these ETFs, and I think one of the most misunderstood things in all of this massive crypto speculative, you know, financialized bubble is, and correct me if I'm wrong on some of the details, but I think since 2017 or sometime around there, the loan model over collateralized Bitcoin lending is 100%. There's been zero defaults, 100% recovery rate, variable APR, but much, much higher than traditional financial, you know, even unsecured debt, in the fiat Ponzi world. And amidst the Celsius blow up and the Genesis blow up and the FTX blow up, there was this kind of broad, like, just misunderstanding that, you know, a bear asset, you know, 24/7, 365 liquid in every currency out on the planet is like the best collateral out there. And it shouldn't be Fed funds plus, you know, 10%, 1,000 basis points. It should be, you know, Fed funds plus 25 bips if you're just thinking in a fiat world. And so the fact, like, that there's all these boomers out there that are investing in, you know, these long dated or even shorter dated fiat liabilities, are looking for, like, you know, yield to chase, if you will. And, you know, what they're doing is they're funding like a Bitcoin speculative attack.
with like actually correct collateral kind of implementation, right? It's not pooled with everyone else, and it's not, you know, there's not a shitcoin Ponzi in the middle of it that's like fueling the bubble, right? It's like a solid foundation. And so that's been like, for me, I think, you know, kind of similar to like the futures basis, right? Kind of as a gauge of like speculative activity, but the kind of the interest rate that you should get in theory on this stuff should be much, much, much lower. And I think that's like why like a frustrating thing, but also like where so much of the opportunity lies is like no one's seemingly figured this out yet at like, you know, the big boys at a massive scale. And they're just starting to like turn back and be like, oh, you know, this is, I misunderstood this.
Yeah, in a couple of ways, I think that, yeah, almost what you're pointing at there is like the measure of actual like hyper Bitcoinization in some regard is almost like the cost of capital towards like Bitcoin secured lending. And so I'd say secured lending also done right when it's like fully collateralized at all times and not really hypothecated. And so given that there is such a massive gap, but you know, 10% even of interest, annual interest rate, that is what the kind of market has, that's one indication that, yeah, a lot of the US-based financial system capital markets are just not understanding, and they're not even just geared up. They're not geared towards this kind of model. And there's a lot of barriers and reasons for that that relate to the kinds of market participants from which you get lower cost of capital end up often being banks. And banks have regulators that have not been given, you know, much friendly charge for working with Bitcoin and crypto companies over the last few years. So a lot of those regulators essentially value the collateral at zero and then kind of prohibit and have prohibitive policies for banks to lend in that space. So it's kind of one major column of your current, you know, credit system that can't participate. Then you have other factors, the rent, how does backup servicing work in a new asset class where, you know, for a lot of lending markets, when it's consumer loans or the other thing, this is kind of paper that can be traded or just a data set of borrowers and payments that's kind of all you need to get up and running if the primary originator goes under. There's a lot more complexity to Bitcoin backload, a lot more going on that requires more kind of robust setup and something that the capital markets, again, can understand. But yeah, I'd say just a major paradox for me and a key part of my, you know, entrepreneurial naivete, even starting out, was the idea that interest rates will surely come down. Surely this will be one of the best price credit products around due to the low-risk nature of it. And I've been so wrong with that. And it's just been such a part of our journey to be, I'd say, really a leading firm, a leading lender in this space that does have the kind of track record we have. And so, you know, we'll be there and we'll be working with the high quality partners that can bring down cost of capital over time.
I mean, if you can value unsecured credit card debt, you know, en masse to American consumers, and you can value subprime auto, and you can value, you know, who knows what, you know, that's financialized today in like the American, you know, Wall Street economy, then you can value like a zero or an extremely like low probability percent chance of default, like, you know, over collateralized Bitcoin loan. And the fact that that arb isn't there yet means like all that it, you know, this continues to operate near flawlessly or, you know, flawlessly, then, you know, it's
like,
it's,
we're either wrong here or like they're like way wrong about, yeah, valuing all those things at the prices they do.
Yeah.
And real funny, you know, I think as we bring up, you know, these types of topics, I think it's important to note that what we've always loved about Unchained, how you've thought about this space, and at Bitcoin Magazine, like we said earlier, we have people who've been following Bitcoin now for 8 years who read our content, and they want to have these discussions. But there's also a large group of people, we really believe in what Bitcoin can do. There's a lot of people who heard a little bit about Bitcoin, want to get involved, and it's intimidating. And so now all of a sudden, you know, especially over at Bitcoin Magazine, where we've been, you know, we have like a course called 21 Days, kind of getting people into Bitcoin. You know, we've had over 100,000 people take this course. And then at the end of it, we're like, okay, so this is how you take custody yourself, do it yourself. Good luck. See you later. And, you know, we always are questioning our business and our goals. How are we making sure that these people, you know, are not intimidated by the next steps? How are they getting on? And we can always sit here and say, oh, they should figure in and do it all on their own. But, you know, to have a partner who can sit there and, you know, once again, if it makes, you know, if it's the right client for Unchained, you know, being able to kind of, I think, put them through that process, kind of, you know, you have an excellent job kind of onboarding. We'd love to have you to kind of describe that and the steps that you take, because we always thought, is this something that we should be doing? How do we do this? And it's just, number one, not in our business model. It's not our business. But we've always felt that we've been kind of doing a disservice to some of our initial readers who are just getting into this, that we haven't been able to partner them with the right people that can take them through that process. Because as you know, for anyone who knows about our company, between Bitcoin Magazine or the Bitcoin Conference or BTC Inc., you know, we want to try to get as many Bitcoiners in the Bitcoin world as we can, but, you know, we're not an exchange, you know, and we're not a hardware company. So to really sit there and ensure that we have the right partner to help that next generation, or to get all these, you know, pre-coiners, no-coiners, whatever you want to call them, to get them into the process, this is kind of our ideal partner to do that. So love to have you talk a little bit more about how you plan on kind of onboarding those people.
Yeah, I'll kind of talk about it from maybe like a destination first to backwards. I think there's a good point place to hand off to Phil, because where he really enters our story. But yeah, I mean, I think Dhruv, to his credit, I think saw through a lot of things as to how Bitcoin is properly secure, just on a first principles basis, what it looks like to reduce single points of failure and leverage native multi-sig capabilities. And so that, you know, that constraint, and then, you know, adopting only that method of working with Bitcoin in our products back in 2016 and 17, that was and very prescient. But then as we started to, you know, unveil the Bolt product and make this available for clients, there's a lot of legwork to do to bring a great majority of clients, you know, over to this kind of model. You know, and I'd say it's kind of, I think a big theme for us, or how we think about our product development and Unchained, is relatively uncompromising in security, or we only want that kind of highest standard of what is going to keep this the most secure for the longest term. And then what we do through our software and product development is then work on the convenience side, because you're often, you're forced in these cases, you think there's this trade-off of, you know, security versus convenience. And that often is practically true, but then the onus is on us and our product development to bend that, like that, almost like make this thing look like a horseshoe by taking the convenience trade-offs and mitigating them through technology and education. And I'd say, you know, we launched our Bolt product in 2019. It has something of a slow start. There's some great early adopters, good positive feedback. We see some resonance in the market, but things only really took off not long after, I'd say, our friend Phil Geiger here joined. And some of the earliest things he did in the product marketing side was just being on calls, handling people through their Vault experience. And so he really kind of built out much of our concierge function here and how we onboard clients with the model and that, the kind of template for that process. So yeah, I'd love to hear, Phil, how you think about it.
Yeah, thanks for that, Joe. I think really what I noticed early on was Unchained has always had the most secure form of custody available for 99.5% of the population. But people really hesitated to take that first step of controlling keys. And I think that it's because we've all read those stories over the years of hard drives ending up in landfills and, you know, forgetting a PIN and losing access to your multi-generational wealth. And what's great about the Unchained Vault is it really solves that problem. By including multiple keys and an additional party, you now can make a mistake. You can lose a seed phrase. You can forget a PIN to a hardware wallet. And it doesn't mean that you lost Bitcoin. And this is applicable for an individual or a family or a business across the board. And what's really cool about it is that this is leveraging Bitcoin's native properties. Historically, and really over the last 15 years, where we've seen a lot of custodians run into issues, is they're attempting to recreate the legacy financial system, but sort of duct taped to this new form of money, Bitcoin. But Bitcoin doesn't function like the dollar. It has its own unique properties. And that's what we've been leveraging at Unchained for now, how many years? 6, 7 years, securing $4.5 billion of Bitcoin. This is something that really works. And it's simple enough that individuals can take that step. Dylan mentioned earlier, the ETFs that have been introduced. There's a problem with the ETFs. I think it's something like 11 out of 13 of them have a single custodian that is securing all those funds. Again, that's just not necessary with Bitcoin. Bitcoin can be distributed and not even distributed. Keys can be distributed across multiple different custody partners. And this delivers categorically superior security outcomes. So starting early on at Unchained, it was quite the journey to kind of get here. But yeah, it was educating people that there is this better way to secure Bitcoin that allows you to sleep easy knowing that if you make a very common mistake that we've all made, forgetting a PIN, forgetting, you know, where you left your seed phrase. I mean, unfortunately, I lost my seed phrases in a boating accident, but luckily, because I was using multi-sig, it's not, I haven't lost any Bitcoin. But anyways, yeah, I think going on this journey with Joe and Dhruv and onboarding hundreds of businesses and individuals to controlling the keys to Bitcoin is just showing the world that there is a better option than either A, giving up full control of your money to some custodian that becomes a single point of failure, or B, going off on your own, in your mountain van kind of setup and holding keys on your own, where if something happens to you, a loved one's not going to be able to recover your Bitcoin.
Yeah, Phil, to go along with that, I think that there's a lot of parallels with, you know, showing people that there's a better way to custody Bitcoin and, you know, leading them down that path. And all of us here, I think, all believe in the mission of Bitcoin, understanding that it's a better form of money categorically, and that it's just a matter of time before people adopt that money. And I think through this partnership, what we want to do is accelerate that process of people understanding both collaborative custody as well as Bitcoin. And one of the things we plan to do is to release an institutional adoption roadmap, basically making the institutional case for a Bitcoin allocation and how to secure said allocation so that you can use it in the, I guess, most beneficial way possible for your entity. So I think that's something that's going to be a bit of a new chapter in Bitcoin Magazine's history. And how we communicate and try to interact with the market is trying to have a broader view of the types of institutions that should be allocating to Bitcoin and why. And I think that's something that Dylan, as our institutional lead, is going to take a lot of interest in. And I think, you know, the market is hungry for it too. I think, as we've said, the education just really hasn't been there. These people don't understand that there is a better way, first of all, to allocate capital via Bitcoin, but also to secure your Bitcoin. And so this is also going to be an educational process for the market that I think we're all really looking forward to and can't wait to collaborate with the Unchained team in making that case for Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I wanted to add that we're in a very unique moment in time because of the ETFs that coincide with all-time highs. And so what I basically think, you know, the hardened veterans that have been through the exchange collapses, that have been through custodians collapsing and the lenders collapsing, they know what to do. But this new wave of people, you know, many times their first entry point would be like a BlackRock commercial on TV. And so I really think that it's important for us, it's important for the world, it's important for us as companies to educate people that, like, you know, if we make the same mistake that happened with gold, where like all of the gold ended up centralizing in the US because of different wars and everything, that is basically what allowed the US to then change the regulation on gold. So like, I think distributed custody is like super, super important. And the thing that we're developing here for an institutional product is like you can actually distribute your keys among different custodians. And so then you get the best out of both worlds. You don't have to hold the keys, so you don't have to lose, you know, you don't have the risk of losing them. And you can choose which custodians you want to work with. But our stance, and we really believe that, is that any single custodian is worse than that same single custodian as part of a network of keys. And so that's why we're really, I think it's very, very important for people to understand that point. And I think there's a huge gap, especially on the institutional side, in that understanding.
Yeah, Dhruv, I know that you've been someone who's talked extensively about Bitcoin needing a network of keys. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to kind of talk about your vision for Bitcoin custody and ownership in the future. I know you have kind of a unique perspective and it's very forward looking. So we'd just love to give you the opportunity to tell folks about how you're seeing this transformation of the custody models that people choose.
Thanks, Spencer, for the opportunity. Yeah, hopefully you guys can hear me okay. If not, I'll just keep talking. Great. I do want to connect back to some of the other comments that were made previously. This has been, you know, a great announcement for me. I'm very excited to be partnering with Bitcoin Magazine, be able to work on it together, be able to create awareness. Be able to connect a little bit about collaborative and how over years I've come to regard it as kind of a network, specifically a network of keys. I think if you go back to, you know, 2016, when Joe and I are building Unchained, it's just a few of us, you know, we're thinking a lot about already how what single points of failure are. I think already at that point, I understood that Bitcoin was defined and unique and important because of the capability of self-custody. And then Unchained as a, not only in a position to custody funds, but also as a financial provider, needed to be able to assure that the Bitcoin that we were writing loans against would really be safe. And so I was already thinking a lot about multi-sig was control choice. We implemented multi-sig when we first launched in 2017, but that quickly evolved for me into the notion of collaboration, mostly because I was being honest with myself about my inability as a small startup to really, you know, prevent some point of failure from manifesting. Huge organizations get hacked and attacked successfully. Google, Facebook, the US government, the DOD, not to mention other exchanges. And there have been many such failures already by that time. The notion is this would somehow be miraculously different by doing nothing that seemed different didn't really make sense to me. So I was searching for, okay, how do I, as a smaller, you know, business, as a someone that doesn't have those millions of dollars of resources to spend on security programs, how do I achieve the next levels? And of course, the answer to me became collaboration. It doesn't have to be my problem alone. My clients are just as interested in security as I am. And together, we're much harder to attack. Two keys or three keys is not two or three times harder to attack than one key. Orders of magnitude. And as a result, I feel like we've been able to grow our form, growing commensurately as a business over the years, while maintaining a level of security that is leagues might obtain if we were more traditional. So it's been very important to me that the notion of collaborative custody as a way to increase everybody's collective security outcomes. Our clients are protecting us just as much as we are protecting them. So collaborative custody eliminates single points of failure, but when I think about the global market for collaborative custody, it's still very nascent. It looks like hubs, you know, there are hubs on the chain, maybe a few other providers of this. And then the spokes around each hub are just our collective separate clients. It's working, but still early picture really successful global networks. They're multi-scale. Right. Let's see what transportation. The transportation are characterized by international airports and major harbors. Those into regional transport centers, hubs, other major interchanges. And many networks have this kind of structure. What for collaboration? What does that look like for safekeeping the world's money supply? What is the equivalent of network? Well, I think it's clear that institutions like Unchained are the hubs of that network, and on us to lead. We need to display I would much prefer if that responsibility was crossing.
I think we're having a Linux. Sounds like your Wi-Fi's cutting out.
Yeah, you might try to move to better signal.
Sorry, guys. I don't wonder if your force is better.
Yeah, that's a little bit better. But maybe just to recap, if you want to cover the kind of movement from hub and spoke into this new model, I think that's where we lost you.
Sure. Yeah. I'm just trying to make the analogy that instead of hubs and spokes, we need networks that look more like other successful human global networks, things that are multi-scale, that has, you know, international, you know, sector, like thinking about the transportation network, networks that are characterized by big major international hubs, regional hubs, and that local streets and markets and exchanges. That's a very successful structure, very robust. And I want to bring that to custody. But I view institutions like Unchained, major exchanges, and also ETFs, the miners, as necessarily needing to educate and lead in this market to create those really high-level hubs in this network. I think there's regional versions of this network. That's professionals that in local cities and locations, whether it's their accountants, financial advisors, trade agents, lawyers, these kinds of folks who really help hold keys for their clients. Not because they're in charge, but because they're helping, as Unchain does at this institutional scale, they're helping their local neighborhoods. And eventually, I think at the most local level, this really does turn into friends and family. Like Bitcoin has this motto of verified trust, but if we're honest, most of us are learning Bitcoin in the early days. We're trusting. We're trusting our friends and our family and the people who are teaching us about Bitcoin. And it's very natural. We see this all the time in Unchained. It's very natural for people to want to hold keys for family members. For a business partner and development and collaborations. And so that's kind of the local level of this network. And I think the same tools and analogies and technology that enable sharing at the institutional scale should be accessible to folks at, you know, at the local scale. And that's, I would say, the broadest mission of what Unchained's trying to bring to market. We no longer want collaborative custody to be something that we or a couple other custody providers uniquely do. We want it to be the ubiquitous common practice across all tiers of this network.
Yeah, I love that. Like the individuals, you know, Bitcoin should never really be in a position where a single individual should be able to lose control of the Bitcoin, because it just doesn't have to be set up that way. Like multisig is built into Bitcoin, and distributing keys among different parties is really trivial. Once you learn a few skills, it's very easy to do. And what I found is super interesting, and Dhruv touched on this point, you know, friends and family can even collaborate in these models. Right now, you know, you might be the Bitcoin person in your group of friends or in your family, and maybe you're even securing seed phrases on behalf of your friends and or family. That's really risky for you, because you end up being a single point of failure for their funds. But what you could do instead is be a minority of keys in this collaborative arrangement. You hold one of three keys, and then you can still participate in your friends and family's Bitcoin security, but you know, you're not at risk of losing their funds for them. You would just, you know, if you lost the key that you're controlling, you'd be able to just kind of rotate that out. So that's a really interesting concept, I think, that people haven't really, it hasn't really gotten out there that far, that even if you're helping people secure Bitcoin, you don't have to be a critical point of failure.
Yeah, listening to you talk about that, Phil, I think about what collaborative custody can do as far as enabling new types of financial services. And I know that we have tax season coming right around the corner, and you guys do have this IRA product that you use. Could you or Shiman maybe talk a little bit more about how this IRA product is unique and why collaborative custody is a core component of this? I think that, like, just especially given the time of year, it's important for people to understand why this product is needed in the first place.
Go ahead, Shiba. Why don't you take this one?
No, Phil, please. By all means.
All right. Yeah, the IRA, I think, is a really perfect example of how Unchained is uniquely positioned. Because Unchained isn't just a collaborative custody or multi-sig wallet or platform. We're a financial services company. So I know there's a lot of Bitcoiners out there that are like, that don't want to necessarily include a company in the security of their Bitcoin, want to do things on their own. That's not really possible in the retirement situation. Retirement is a very heavily regulated industry. And there's also, I think, something around $35 trillion locked in the legacy retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs, and so on. And the Unchained IRA is the best positioned product to be able to help people move their retirements into Bitcoin, where they actually have control of the keys. So clients get to hold a majority of the keys. You have control of the movement of the Bitcoin, but at the same time, Unchained is there, and we're able to help you as a backup, and then also with any of the sort of legal reporting requirements of an IRA. So you could have a traditional or Roth IRA where you control the keys to
retirement Bitcoin, and that would be, you know, tax advantage Bitcoin. So if you have a Roth IRA, you're not paying any capital gains tax on the appreciation of the Bitcoin over time. It's a really, really cool product, and we're like uniquely positioned to be able to offer it in this way that is just differentiated and significantly more secure than any alternative.
Yeah, hearing you say that makes me think about the difference between Bitcoin and gold. Like, you wouldn't be able to hold your own Bitcoin, or sorry, your own gold in an IRA like you do with Bitcoin. Like, that ability to have it be digitally native, but also being able to distribute those keys is very unique. And I think just kind of points in the direction of Bitcoin is opening up new possibilities, a new possibility space for people that want to, I guess, just interact with their financial lives in an intentional way. And that's one of the things that I think makes Unchained so interesting, is really this kind of security first approach that I think is an about face from a lot of what we've seen over the last few years in the crypto industry as a whole. So, you know, just from speaking for myself here at Bitcoin Magazine, I'm just, you know, incredibly excited to be able to work with the team at Unchained. And I think that it's offering a lot of possibilities to our readers that they didn't know were available to them. So I think that that's incredibly exciting. And for everyone listening to, we do have, if you go to our partner site, it's up there in the nest, but there are some offers to Bitcoin Magazine readers who want to take advantage of this. Definitely recommend checking it out. And the team at Unchained is happy to walk you through any questions you may have as well. They're excellent from the customer service side. So just, yeah, recommend everyone give that a look if they're interested.
And I'm excited to say this is just the start of this partnership and relationship, and excited for everyone to see all the things that we're going to be doing together over the next couple of years. And this is just the start. We appreciate people even being willing to jump on the spaces to hear us talk about it. But, you know, we can't tell you enough how excited we are, and especially everyone at the Bitcoin Magazine team. Thanks for the Unchained team for this opportunity, and thanks for all of our kind of readers and everyone else who supports us, and we're excited to do big things together.
It's great to work with high quality people. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you guys. We're really looking forward to connecting in person as well. We are going to be hosting a number of in-person collaborative events with the Unchained team, and I think those are going to be a lot of fun, and we hope to bring some big names from the institutional landscape of finance and connect them with the Bitcoin community in a unique and novel way. So stay tuned there, but we do have a lot more cooking for everyone. So looking forward to you know, seeing where and showing where this collaboration goes. Going to be very excited.
Are we wrapping this up, or are we going to go six? Because I have an esoteric sort of question for Dhruv.
What a rim.
Hell yeah. I think the most kind of orange pilled idea is that Bitcoin is like, we're climbing the Kardashev scale, and Bitcoin is just kind of this unit of account and economic incentive to do so at a more efficient scale than we've ever seen. And I know you've written some interesting stuff with Bitcoin astronomy. So just what do you think about that idea, as well as just, you know, obviously the bigger idea of decapitalizing fractional reserve banking, which self-custody and auditability do. Some really abstract sort of things, but on the physics side of it, you know, with Bitcoin being like from a thermodynamic standpoint, you know, which is obviously, yeah, esoteric, but what, yeah, I think that's the most exciting thing.
Wow. Okay. I hopefully you guys can hear me a little bit better. Let me know if my connection cuts out again, but, I won't get into maybe the cosmic horror of some of those ideas, or I'll maybe instead frame it as what led me to think about some of that stuff. I have a physics background, and I often think a tool that physicists use is they try to extremize some variable in a problem, and maybe that casts a light on the problem, the original problem. So I was thinking a lot when I was writing those articles about block size and transmission times and Bitcoin's value and et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, hey, what happens if they're just happening really far apart in space, like on Mars or, you know, outside the solar system? That was initially just a fun exercise to model something like a really big block moving over a network with low bandwidth. But it led me to lots of really fun and interesting ideas. And I really enjoyed writing about it. So definitely check it out. If you guys, you can Google Bitcoin astronomy. I think I own that phrase. Find some on speculations about that future context. One idea that comes up in that context is, well, what happens like as Bitcoin becomes more valuable? Like, if you really believe that Bitcoin is the world's or the solar systems or the galaxies, whatever, however you want to take this idea, if you really believe that Bitcoin is the money of the world, protecting it becomes really important. Like, how would you do that? What's the best possible way to do that? And I think a lot of people, when they really play that game out, even today, right now, here in our world with Bitcoin as it is today, inevitably lead to the conclusion that you want to avoid the single points of failure, and you want to spread it out, whether that means, you know, around your city, around your planet, around your solar system. You want to spread access, and you want to be slow. Like, the larger the amount of value you're transacting with, the slower and more careful you have to be about handling it. I kind of think that, that physics spirit, like, sort of pretending, like, how would you treat Bitcoin if it were like the money of the world or the solar system or whatever, and then just try to apply that philosophy as best you can on Bitcoin as it is in front of you today, that kind of leads to some of these collaboration and multi-sig ideas. And so that's what helps to make me feel confident sometimes and on-chain strategy, is because I know that it's ultimately, I think, the right way to build custody and financial services. I'm excited to be working on now.
Yeah, one of my funniest things about the Bitcoin Astronomy series, I think, is maybe there's a little inside baseball, but after Drew wrote it, he was thinking, this is great, but I've jumped too far into the future. And so now he's going back, I think, with his recent article, How Did Satoshi Think of Bitcoin? And it's laying the foundation for kind of the more near-term future. I don't know if you want to talk about that at all, Drew.
You folks are really putting me on the spot. Well, I guess I'll just say briefly that it's fun to think about the future, but it's also important to think about the past. I've read the Bitcoin white paper so many times in my life, but I don't think I ever really read it and like tried to really deeply think about not so much what it means or how it's presented, but how did the person who wrote this think of these ideas? Like, what must they have been thinking about and reading in order to make these breakthroughs? And so that was a really fun exercise for me. And my short answer to the question is, they were really concerned. Satoshi was really concerned with a finite money supply and all the other positive aspects of Bitcoin, the difficulty adjustment, the cleverness of that stem from this fundamental requirement. And in some sense, applying that philosophy, or sorry, applying that constraint, that requirement to existing projects like B-Money, it's sort of, if you squint, you can see how maybe you might have arrived at Bitcoin if you had made the same requirements and pursued the same questions. That was a fun article to write. And the part of that article, the point of writing that article is to really prepare myself and the reader, hopefully, for future articles to come that kind of explore the consequences of this kind of thinking in the rest of Bitcoin, specifically thinking about Bitcoin as layers and markets and really kind of a technology for manipulating human beings into collectively profitable behavior, not so much a technology for getting bits to move around on computers, which I think is one of the mistakes that all of the smart contracts and altcoin make. So I'm excited to kind of complete that series. A little bit more bound to earth, but also fun and speculative.
And I wanted to touch on the geographical distribution, because I think that's something that people don't necessarily pay enough attention to. So do you know, guys, about gold? Everybody talks about the fact that it's like a finite supply and that it only increases by a steady amount. All of that is very well known, that that's what made gold good money. But another critical thing about gold is that it's geographically distributed kind of evenly. Like, imagine if all of the gold was like in North America, then it would be terrible money, right? Because like, whoever controls it, first of all the rest of the world would try to attack them to get their gold. But also, all the rest of the world wouldn't use it as a, you know, way to transfer value. And I think that that's the key part here about, like, we want to distribute the access to Bitcoin as widely as possible. And I'm personally kind of worried, you know, if the Bitcoin ETFs in the US become the main point of exposure to people, and then it becomes just like super, super dangerous because it can just be co-opted, whether directly or indirectly, by governments or by attackers. And then the other problem is that this is something that people will only realize it after it happens. Just like leaving your Bitcoin on an exchange. You know, I think Mt. Gox and all of these things, you know, before those things happened, nobody thought of, like, it's a problem to leave Bitcoin on an exchange. But the thing is, people who left their Bitcoin on exchange, that was the minority of Bitcoin. Whereas here, it might be too late by the time people realize that. So that's why I think we should all of us should like do a lot of educational work to say, okay, how do we not screw this up? Because there's a huge opportunity, but also a huge risk.
Yeah, and I think ultimately that's what it comes down to for this partnership is we want to show people the right way and why to do it the right way. And we're really excited to be able to create and co-produce educational content for the market and also to integrate Unchained into our 21 Days product for basically with the people that have their first touch point of Bitcoin, trying to understand what it is from the ground up. We want them to understand what the end goal is and why the end goal is that way of taking self-custody. And how they can achieve that in a way that's approachable to them. Because I think as we all know, like when you start going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, it can be incredibly overwhelming and feeling like there is still so much ahead of you. And I think having this tangible and accessible endpoint for people of pointing them to Unchained and saying, here's where you can go if you need help and you want help securing your Bitcoin the right way, this resource is available to you. So all that said, I think this is going to be a wonderful partnership, both for educating the market and for saving people from loss. I think, Bitcoin is deeply intertwined with how we preserve and grow our wealth. And I think being able to provide that with the best tools available to our customers is something we're incredibly fortunate and excited to be doing here. And I guess I'll just toss it over to Mike and Joe. If you guys have any final thoughts here, I think we're getting to a good ending point here, but if you guys want to take this out of here with any broad takeaways or just kind of a hoorah, let us know.
No, I think all that's been said that's been said, and I think that it's been fun. I appreciate y'all having us on to your spaces, and yeah, look forward to this being an excellent year.
Thank you, everybody. And I think as we go from collaborative custody, I feel like partnering, now we have collaborative content. It seems like hopefully a good match. We're excited to see where this goes. Thank you for the whole team. And I think we can leave it here unless, Dylan, you have another thermodynamic question. Make me always feel stupid talking after me. But wanted to say, once again, thank you, everybody. This has been great. And we look forward to seeing you both in person, online, and in the future.
Fun talk, guys. It was great to work together in the future.
Look forward to the next one.
Looking forward to it.
Just trying to get another million more Bitcoiners on the network. Here we go.
Awesome. Can't wait, guys. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we look forward to talking to you soon. Have a great day.